Well, welcome everybody. I usually don't have a view of this room from up here. Actually, it's the first time. Is anybody new here, by the way? Anybody first time? One back there? Well, welcome. We meet here every Monday, and I usually have a similar type of format of meditation and talk. And check out the website. There's classes that are coming up, and Rob will make an announcement later about some of that stuff. So, yeah, welcome you and everybody else. I hope this is going to be a worthwhile evening for you. Again, my name is Jerry Harder. I'm one of the local Dharma leaders, one of the LDLs, as they say. And I've been practicing for quite a while, since back in the mid-80s. Usually that's when I think about my first residential retreat as kind of the foundation of my practice. I've taught a couple of beginning classes, but haven't sat in for the teacher here. And so I feel honored. I feel a bit awed and nervous. So anyway, I hope what I have to say tonight, there's going to be something here that's you can take away that might be worthwhile. If there isn't, well, okay. Have a good evening regardless. So anyway, Tweri and Tim, and I think Carrie Peterson was here. I'm not sure who else, but it's on the series of the factors of awakening, seven factors of awakening. And this month, Tweri's been talking about the factor of energy, or virya. And I'm going to continue with that talk this evening. I'm going to continue with that theme. And it's the third of the factors. It's one of the first three of the factors have to do with kind of an active engagement, the mindfulness, the investigation, and virya is kind of active. And then the other ones are, you know, PT, I gotta forget them all offhand. Rapture, PT, calm, concentration, equanimity, more of the settling factors that we get into. And together they provide the nourishment and support to allow us to realize full awakening. I'm going to begin this evening with something that, as I looked at this, I read a bit and heard, listened a bit from Ajahn Sucitto. Christina Feldman is a favorite teacher of mine. And one thing that she offered that kind of caught my attention about virya was she used a translation of virya being heroism. And often we hear their translation as energy. There's a number of translations, like a lot of these Pali terms. English doesn't quite capture the essence of a Pali term, so we often have to talk around it, this word and that word. And with all the words coming together, we finally get an understanding and a sense of what is meant by the word. So virya, let's begin with that, as a heroism from that perspective. And she says, an unshakability of our commitment, a persistence, a willingness to step out of our comfort zone, embrace fears, go against our natural inclination. Virya is not just an issue of energy. We have plenty of energy for desire and anger. So, we've been often talking about virya and energy, and it was interesting, 2 weeks ago, I've been enjoying the Northwest summer. I love this time of the year. I like getting out, going hiking, walking in the parks. I like the late nights. It's still light out at 9. There's not much rain. The birds are out in the morning. It's just a real pleasant time of the year. And 2 weeks ago, I was enjoying that. I was going out hiking. I was wake up in the morning, have my cup of tea, watch the birds come to the feeder. Life was good. An email came through from Tweri with an invitation. She sent it out to a couple of the LDLs, the local Dharma leaders, and asked, could somebody cover her for this evening's talk? Well, my first inclination, to be honest, was, I don't know. I'm kind of liking my life right now, and I know if I take on a talk, it requires a lot of work, and knowing me, I'll worry. Do I want to worry? So that was my first response. And then I thought about it. Well, you know, I thought, maybe one of the other LDLs would step forward. But I said, no, I can't go that way. I can't come. I got to decide this one for myself. So I told her, I told her, replied to Tori, I said, well, okay, I'm thinking about it, but I got to admit, I'm a bit worried. I don't want to know. I want to reel in this worry. I'll let you know in the morning. Well, the other LDLs, right, they responded, and they said, go for it, Jerry. Good. Great. You know, I couldn't help but think my older brothers used to do the same type of thing with me. Yeah, go. But I think this was a little bit more kindness in their, what they're up to. So I did. And I made a decision to do it. And why would one do that? Why would one reel in something that's kind of scary, worrisome, and things like that? And for me, I've been doing this practice for quite a while, like I say, and it's a worthwhile practice, and it's been a change of life practice. It's been the most important thing I've learned in my lifetime, and goes far beyond anything I've learned in college. So it's worthwhile, and you know, I've listened to teachers over the years, and I've appreciated what they've had to offer, and I had this opportunity. And I had no reason to say no. And my reason to say yes is that it's a good thing to do. And it kind of goes, I didn't think about it at the time, but it kind of goes to the heart of virya. It's that, in what Christina Feldman says, it's that energy that allows you to move in a direction where you're aligned with your best intentions and values and view. And you'll do that regardless of the difficulty, because this is the path I'm on. So I said yes, and here I am. And I did worry. I spent a lot of time worrying the last couple of weeks. What am I going to say? What am I going to do? How am I going to do it? I spent a lot of time procrastinating. But the interesting thing, the thing I really appreciated about the whole process, is that it was an opportunity for me to really practice and learn about virya and this energy. I ordinarily don't think in those terms in my practice. I don't think about virya per se. You know, when I'm thinking about practice, I'm thinking about, well, mindfulness. I'm thinking about the Four Noble Truths. I'm thinking about the hindrances. I'm thinking about the Brahma Viharas. But energy, not so much. It's kind of the water I swim in. It's everywhere, but it's not something that I turn to and say, well, what is this? So it was an opportunity. It was a good decision. I haven't used my notes yet, so now I gotta get relocated here. Something I usually think about. It is an opportunity. And it was an opportunity to start delving into it, and an opportunity to start hearing what the teachers say. And I mentioned a couple of my favorite teachers, who I turned to very off the top, were Ajahn Suchido and Christina Feldman. There could have been a number of them. Rodney, certainly. And so I listened to what they have to say, and I started investigating. I started watching, how is energy relevant in my own life? How do I bump into issues in my own life where I somehow bring that effort, that extra inclination to move in a direction where my values lie? So along the way, I used a couple of other of the factors of enlightenment, and that was investigation, and that was mindfulness. They certainly were components. What's going on here? I'm asking myself. Where am I? What should I do? There's lots of reflection in that regard. And I also was able to be mindful of my tendency to procrastinate. Well, you know, 2 weeks, I thought, boy, how am I going to do in 2 weeks? But day by day, you know, I said, well, I should get going on this. You know, I got that should came out. I watched the energy around that should. It was helpful to notice that inclination. Well, I should do this, but I want to do this. I think I'll find some sort of diversion instead, day after day. I do a little bit. I did a little research. And it got to be a bit of a practice to notice the degree to which I put things off. But also, it was a practice in noticing, you know, the joy and satisfaction I got about looking at this aspect of our practice. So I'd feel energized listening to a talk. I'd get clarity about this practice. It was good to hear, you know, teachers I've heard before. There's a certain pleasure and happiness that came from that. But what an odd thing to be doing. You know, I was minding my own business, watching the birds fly into my feeder and going out and hiking, and now I'm doing this looking into Virya. I went out to dinner with friends of mine, went on a hike and dinner. No, I didn't make it to the dinner. I went out hiking, and we were going to go to dinner. It was a Friday afternoon. I said, I'm going to have to pass on dinner. I'm working on this talk on Monday. So in our conversation over the course of the day, they were talking about their travels to Italy. Eat, drink, be merry. That's what they were talking about. They don't have a sense of meditation. So they say, well, what are you up to? I said, oh, I'm giving this talk. What are you doing a talk on? And I'm thinking, uh-oh. And here's a little, I need to have a little bravery and courage here. How do I communicate this? You know, oh, and then I said, okay, I'm going to just go for it. And with in mind that you might not get to understand this, I said, I'm going to do a talk on something called Virya. It's this meditation, something that we do in our meditation practice. It has to do with energy. And it has to do with the energy that we use when we are used in order to align with our best values, the things that are most important in our lives. And so I'm talking about it. And how even though we might find it difficult, we go there anyway. We use this energy comes forth and we go where into a direction that might be challenging. And to my surprise, the woman of the couple said, oh, that's what I'm doing. She got it completely. And like I say, it was eat, drink, and be merry the last number of months, and then they kind of live, you know, full life like that. But they also do volunteer work. And she was volunteering to go to Bolivia. She's a dental hygienist. And she was going to go to Bolivia to help deal with people who had cavities, kids, in this remote village. She had gone there before, and she came back from the last time. She really valued it. She was excited about it. But she said, it was just too much work. I don't think I'm going to do it anymore. That was it. But the opportunity appeared again. And she said, yes, one more time. So she said, yeah, I get it. There are things that we value, and there is this energy that allows me to move in that direction. So Virya is a real critical aspect of this practice, and it's not only one of the factors of enlightenment, it's also included in a number of other lists. It's included in the Indriyas, which is kind of a set of five things, which kind of the warrior, the things that gives you know, the power and strength and endurance. It's in the paramis, the things, list of, including mindfulness, energy, dana, resolve, equanimity, a number of things that way, which allows us to meet these waves and these that wash over us, and we go, you know, how do I deal with this now? It allows us to confront the difficulties in life, and it's in, and Indriya or Virya is also in the form of right efforts. It includes the Eightfold Path, so it's an important aspect of our practice. Everything we do requires energy, even sleeping. Now, our bodies are active, but the energy that's implied by virya is the energy that allows us to engage in this practice and to follow a path that's aligned with our values and intentions. It allows us to follow a path aligned with our values and intentions. So this kind of begs the question, what is that path? What are our values? And where do we go from there? So what's it all about? Here we are on this earth, and watching a space program and seeing the dot of the earth in the middle of this, our solar system. You know, we're here, you know, operating. What do we do with this? How do we meet its challenge? What makes for a good life? And I guess most immediately, how do we act out of the current moment in a way that's worthwhile, that's aligned with our values? So these are kind of basic questions that everybody answers more or less one way or another. And if they aren't looked at, they're pretty much walking around confusion. There's going to be a randomness to a life that doesn't somehow investigate what's it all about and why are we here and how should I make use of my time. So answer these questions are important if we want to use our energy wisely. What's our vision? What's our view? Where are we going? If I'm trying to go from to Portland, I'll need more than just energy to move me down the road. Yeah. I'll need to know where I'm starting from. And I'll need to know where I'm going. Yogi Berra, the great philosopher of the 20th century, said, "If you don't know where you're going, you're going to end up somewhere else." And so it goes. So, but we also need a starting point. And in terms of a starting point, Google offers our answer. Use your current location. This author, Casey Girard, I forgot what he wrote, where I got that from, but he says, "No GPS in the world can lead you to a destination if you don't know your current location." For our practice, our current location is also necessary, and our current location is our bodies. It's our sense of being present, our sense of being here, our sense of being here and now. If we're not, our minds, our thinking minds, takes us on a journey around the world, past, present, and imagined places. If we're not here and now, we're going to get lost and confused as we try to act. So this is our first place where virya is helpful, being mindful of the present, being clear about our view, where we're going. So where shall we go from here? How do we want to use our energy? Well, it's not easy being human. There are a lot of challenges. There's difficulties. Some things are just frustrations. Some things are just inconveniences. But other things are much more extreme. Extreme anguish, trauma, and grief. And we're humans. We're sensitive to this. We naturally get affected by things. And we can control life's conditions and how we feel. We can't just decide to be happy. nor do we ever decide to be miserable. So people typically come up with a response to this challenge. And our culture, in general, typical strategy, and I think probably most of us, and more or less, our strategy is to seek out all the pleasant bits and try to hold at bay and get around and avoid anything that's difficulty, any of those unpleasant bits. But that's not easy. Matter of fact, it's pretty much impossible. It's impossible because things are changing. It's an ever-changing world. And so to try to navigate around that type of impermanence is like trying to deal with the weather. Clouds are coming and going. And to try to get some stability there is a futile pursuit. The strategy, however, arises from kind of a mistaken notion that we have control of things, that we can arrange things and arrange relationships in some sort of stable, predictable way. And if we can do that, we'll be happy. Unfortunately, things are impermanent, things change, things fall apart. And so we use up a lot of energy with our wanting, with our avoiding, and with our worrying, trying to secure and protect that one final dependable arrangement in an ever-changing world. And all that takes a lot of energy, it's futile, and it creates a lot of stress. On the other hand, kind of why we're gathered here, the Buddhist view, and I guess I wouldn't call it only the Buddhist view, like I say, my friend had elements of this view herself. The Buddhist view about life is to have an intention and use our energy for my welfare, for the welfare of others, and leading to peace. There's a nice story, many of you probably heard this. It's a story about, I think it's supposedly at some attributed as a Cherokee tale about the two wolves. And this grandmother and grandson were together preparing a meal. And the grandmother was noticed that the grandson was a bit quiet this evening. And she asked, "Grandson, what's happening here?" And he said, "Yeah, well, today my best friend and I had a fight, and now we're not talking to each other, and I'm feeling very sad." And a grandmother takes it in. "Ah, yes." And she says, "You know, there are two wolves that are one on each shoulder. One wolf is a mean wolf, an angry wolf, a greedy wolf. The other wolf is a gentle wolf, a kind wolf, a caring and giving wolf. These two wolves are always in conflict with one another. There's always a bit of fighting between the two of them." And the grandson asks, "Well, which one wins?" And the grandmother says, "The one that you feed." So one wolf feeds on greed, hatred, and delusion, the defilements, the hindrances of wanting, hindrances of aversion, agitation, dullness, sleepiness, and doubt. The other wolf feeds more on the Brahma Viharas and other practices of the heart, kindness, compassion, equanimity, generosity, patience, goodwill. So in terms of our GPS analogy, we start here, grounded in our bodies, and proceed with the intention of living our lives for the welfare of myself and for others. So comparing these two paths, if we're motivated by personal goals success and failure, gain and loss, trying to secure the pleasant experiences and avoid the unpleasant ones. We falter when things don't go well. Things fall apart. When things fall apart, when relationships end, when we get sick as we age, when friends die, when we ultimately die. We're left with confusion. We're left out there. We falter. However, if personal gain and achievement are not our motives, if our intentions have to do with caring and kindness, then it's easier to sustain our focus regardless of the conditions of our life. We still have a home base. We're still grounded in our highest, most important things in our lives. And we can navigate the difficulties using that guidance. So how much energy does it take to be mindful in the current moment? Now, what energy? What are we talking about energy here? So just let's try this. Let's check this out. Check out what it takes, how much energy it takes to be aware of your body right now. Yeah? Not much energy, really, is there? Let's go there. It's easy to find the present moment. It's right there. Just turn to it. But there was an effort. There was an effort to pause, an effort to have an intention to be mindful. Still, as we all know, as you probably experienced earlier on, it's not always quite that easy. If we want some sort of continuity of mindfulness, of our being here, we notice that there's a lot of distractions. And that it's not so easy to be present. And it has a lot to do with the hindrances and other defilements that we bump into during sitting meditation. And these occur in every aspect of our lives. There's always that, am I able to be aware? Am I able to do this? Why can I do this and not that? Things require energy. Eating potato chips. How much energy does it take to eat a potato chip? How much energy does it take not to eat a potato chip? Depending on your likes and dislikes, you might have different answers to that. It's easy to react out of habit. No problem. It would have been easy for me to sit for 2 weeks watching birds come through the feeder. No problem. Wouldn't have been bad, not bad, but it would have been easy. For our desires, downing a pint of Ben and Jerry's ice cream, me, easy. Bag of potato chips, easy. Resisting that impulse, difficult. Likewise, it's easy to have a strong opinion about others and argue with someone. It's much more challenging to be mindful and speak mindfully. And there's a lot of energy that gets used up and it's needed for picking up the pieces after we act out of those strong views and opinions and get into an argument. It'd be nice to use our energy more wisely, more aligned with our best intentions. Christina Feldman said, energy and interest go hand in hand. Without interest, intentions turn into a should. And I mentioned that earlier. I had intention to write this, to make this talk. Occasionally that became a should. It's worth noting that. It's worthwhile just noting it, not buying into it. Christina also says, if we fall into love, nobody has to ask us to pay attention. Likewise, if we fall into hate, it's easy to sustain our attention. Energy does not come from shooting or striving, but rather it comes from a feeling of joy as we align ourselves with our best intentions and motives. And that's kind of made a reference to that as I started the introduction. There was a certain joy that I see, oh, wow, nice to see this talk, nice to explore this practice. My friends say, yeah, I'm feeling really excited about going down there and helping with the kids who need dental care. There's a joy, and that gets to be the next step in this factors of enlightenment, the piti, the joy, the rapture. So there's a motivation component here, and motivation is developed by reflecting on things. Motivation is reflecting on the nature of our lives, on dukkha, the suffering that we all experience in one way or another. Motivation can arise from reflecting on impermanence, death, our shared humanity. Out of that comes a sense of just like us, just like you and me, other people want to be happy. You know, likewise, reflections on the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha can also arouse interest. And motivation, curiosity, interest arouse energy and allow us to act aligned with our best intentions. Look at something here. Where and how to use energy with a task at hand. Just an example. I go on frequent retreats, and I've been back east to Barre, Massachusetts, IMS, the Forest Refuge, if any of you know that, where kind of Joseph, Sharon Salzberg, that's kind of their base at the beginnings. I do a work retreat, which means that I'm going to be doing a lot of jobs in the kitchen or housekeeping. And some jobs I like, others I do not. There's one job there that is daunting. They have this huge, it's a commercial stove, beautiful stove. There are large gas burners, just spread out. And the cooks make wonderful food on those burners. And my job sometimes is to clean those burners, clean that whole stove. And there's all these nooks and crannies. I don't like things that require a lot of particularity. You know, I don't like it. I've been on a number of retreats. One time I saw he was a person that actually used to be, see him a lot at Sims. He had that same job, and I was working in the kitchen. I saw him cleaning that stove. And he was right there. And he was right in it. And he was close to it. And he did this piece, and he did that piece. And I said, wow, how does he do that? How is he able? And so it was inspiring. It was inspiring. Again, Sangha is inspiring. So I had another opportunity at that. And I went there, and it's a matter of, again, being aware of the resistance. My reaction is to push away. There's two things that are in common. There's a pushing away. I don't want to get close. I have this resistance. And at the same time, I want to get this over with. I push and I try to get it done and I just blast on through. And after it's done, I'm exhausted. I'm tired. And I'm just not feeling good about the job. When I did that very same job and I decide I'm going to do it like my friend from Sims did it, I allowed myself to get close to it. I started by, oh, this is where the cooks are making our nice meals. I was doing this as a service. And getting close it really got to be pleasant. I couldn't believe it. It was like turning a switch. The resistance, the energy of pushing away was not accomplishing much. Getting close, welcoming, opening became a pleasant experience. After I finished that, I said, dang, that looks great. You know, the PT, it's the next step. It's that joy that arose, the satisfaction. I have a similar one. They have a dining room floor bigger than this room. I'm not big at mopping floors in my house. It's, you know, walk on. Why bother? But there's another one. Resisting. When I resisted, I would try to get it over with. It was tiring. When I welcomed it, I opened up to it. It was pleasant. And I appreciated the work. So I think that's where Virya comes. They work at concert. The mindfulness recognizes what's going on. The hindrances are recognized. The Virya is aligning with our best intentions, putting aside the hindrance, putting aside the resistance, moving into welcoming, moving into the positive aspects of our practice, the caring, the giving, the opening up to. This is how Virya can work. So, the hindrances use a lot of energy. Negativity, blaming, complaining take energy. Apathy, sloth, torpor, that hindrance takes energy. Surprising, isn't it? Surprising how much energy just being sluggish uses up. You know, how many people have had that experience? I don't feel like doing anything today. And it can be fueled and it can keep on going along that track. But every once in a while, maybe that wisdom comes, oh, maybe I should take a walk. You know, it's that, and that often, the very thing that's counterintuitive, moving away from that sloth and torpor to energy and vital, invigorating, is uplifting. The hindrance of doubt. This sends energy in the wrong direction. Yeah, we're on our path, but all fine and good. This path is difficult. I'm not sure what to do here. Maybe it's not good. Austin, we're off in a different direction. We're just burning energy, you know, fussing. What do I do now? We're kind of lost, and we don't have a ground anymore. We don't have that guidance. So we try to find certainty in a direction that doesn't exist. Speculation, rumination, well, maybe this, maybe that. Sense desires, another one of the hindrances. They can have an initial surge. Oh, this feels good. And you move forward and you kind of get going. But ultimately, it drains energy because it's not sustainable. You get one surge, it's impermanent, you need another one. Need to get going again. Sometimes more energy and effort is needed to. Sometimes more energy is needed to align with our values and our best intentions, and sometimes less. If we've been practicing one of the hindrances, in other words, kind of indulging some of these resistance and so forth, it may require a lot more energy to rally to next time we are stuck in that habit. We're kind of got to have that habit entrenched. It may take more energy to say, no, I'm not going there this time. I know this isn't helpful. I've been there, done that. But moving in that direction might be a bit of a challenge. And likewise, if we've been practicing kindness, generosity, some of the more wholesome qualities. Then dealing with, then that can encourage being kind and generous in the future as well. It gains momentum. It builds on itself. But now you're building on more of a wholesome, positive direction. So when these hindrances, when the hindrances get practiced a lot, they become habitual patterns. They become set programs. Something called sankharas. They're kind of programs that run in our minds. And we can easily fall into. This is a routine. This is a habit. They are repeated and they get reinforced. When that happens, it becomes a real challenge to recognize and resist because it's such a normal way that we're acting. And so it takes a bit to recognize just how much we might be caught in a real regular kind of unhelpful type of pattern that's been almost programmed and habituated into our psyche. So it may take a bit to realign with our best intentions. Yeah. We always have energy for habits, but it can be a challenge to rally the energy and not mechanically just follow out on these programs. Yeah. So casting off, getting past, dealing with some of these five hindrances really requires a certain steadiness of energy. Now, sometimes we can just make a strong intention and do it. We can have a clarity. We can make a strong intent and then move forward on it. We have a sense this is a good idea. We overrides any type of counter argument. And we just do it. Ajahn Suchito, people know Ajahn Suchito, he's a monk that he grew up in London. He's a Brit. He studied in what's called the Thai forest tradition. And he's a well respected, one of the most respected teachers these days. So he talks about the importance of setting boundaries around our practice. And let me read something about that. So he says, setting wide boundaries. Regulating and directing energy has to do with establishing boundaries. We must consider what is unskillful, what leads to harmful results, what should be left aside. And we must consider what is skillful, what channels our energy towards that which is supportive and nourishing. The most obvious area that we should consider is our ethical standards. Otherwise, we're going to have to deal with psychological and social mess, the furtiveness and guilt that comes from not making our ethical boundaries clear. And what are those boundaries? How does he kind of describe them? He says, for my welfare, welfare of others, and does not lead to stress and leads towards peace. Instead of setting up a boundary between ourselves and others, this reflection aims for a boundary between intentions and actions. Then we can check. We can see when we're crossing this boundary. So boundaries around actions are necessary, and it is up to you to establish them. You can't just be passive. Some things have to be deliberately left outside. No, this is doing me no good. Or, that's not my concern right now. I don't need to do that. There is a definite no to this boundary. Make it firm, give it some energy, and it will look after you. You can make much of a boundary out of, you can't make much of a boundary of, out of, well, I suppose I ought to give that up one day. Or maybe, that type of thing. What does the energy of that feel like? On the other hand, there also has to be a yes boundary. For example, I'm going to be fully with this. I've made a commitment. I'm going to see this through. Then establish that with care and give it some energy. And even if you fall from time to time, still come back to those boundaries. Look into how they caved in or where they were too tight and learn a few things. So boundaries. And that's kind of, I guess we have a sense of that. I mean, it's like commitments. Commitments can be liberating. Commitments, people say, I'm committed to this partnership. I'm committed to this relationship. I'm committed to marriage. I'm committed to raising my kids in the best way I know how. I'm committed to this job. I'm committed to living a life of service. These commitments can take away the wobbliness that we may have. When doubt arises, no, this is what I do here. It liberates, and it requires less energy rather than have to think out every single time, have to rethink it. Well, should I or shouldn't I? Should I or should I? No, this is where I can go. It doesn't require as much energy. We don't have to have pure intentions to act wholesome, worthwhile ways. There can be some kind of, in this way and that way. It could require effort to be kind, to practice kindness and compassion. And if we are not quite clear about those intentions, the virya can help us clarify how to land. Which side of this issue should I land on? Oh yeah, this is the one that's aligned with my values. This is the decision I make. This is the wolf that I feed. So virya can be helpful in recognizing the obstacles, recognizing hindrances, what's in the way, reminding ourselves our highest values, bringing effort and energy into being mindful, into sitting still, into investigation, effort into recognizing our resistance, effort into saying, oh, I know where this leads. This isn't worthwhile. I'm going to let it go. Having an interest in the resistance itself. I was talking about that stove. Oh, I'm resisting here. What's this like? Not helpful. Get close. So having interest in resistance itself, recalling our appreciation, and can be helpful. And recalling our intentions and appreciation of our intentions can be helpful. When the effort and energy is applied at the right place, if effort is applied in the right place, it doesn't require as much energy. More energy is needed if there's resentment or resistance. Rather than struggling with the resistance, we can mindfully be curious and interested about the resistance itself. Experience it in our bodies, gradually relaxing and releasing with interest to be present. Gradually relaxing and being interest and to be present and closer to being present. So, a little summary of Ajahn Suchito. To summarize, energy, virya, has a fourfold application. First, to put aside what you feel is unhelpful. Second, guard the mind against the unskillful influences. Third, establish what you sense is good. And lastly, to support and encourage those skillful influences. This requires wise discernment, advice from experienced people, trial and error to know what's appropriate in any given situation. So, I started out talking about Christina Feldman talking about Virya's heroism. Yeah. And I've gained an appreciation of that. That choice to decide to talk tonight, come up with this talk, was a worthwhile endeavor for me. I feel good about it, and I felt I learned. It was good use of time. So I'm going to say a couple of things that Christina Feldman says. So Virya energy is supported by insight and tempered by patience. Virya energy is used for restraint and to bring benefit to others, and is linked to compassion. And kind of a Buddhist, old Buddhist expression that she mentioned, whatever we dwell on becomes the shape of our minds, bringing to fruition that which truly liberates. Ask the question, what is this time in service of? What is it dedicated to? Where do we hang our hats upon? And practice for my welfare, for the welfare of others, and leading to peace. So thank you for your attention. Hopefully there's something worthwhile there. Welcome to take it home. If not, you can leave it be. So anyway, that's let me just sit just a second here. I need to sit a second. You can join me. Let's let this energy settle down. So, for my welfare, the welfare of others, and leading to peace. Any questions or comments? Yeah, Rob. I'll try, see where it goes and see whether it makes sense to you. A lot of these things, it's hard to say, this is the beginning, this is the end. There's so much intertwiningness of it. Yeah. Certainly, attention is like what's intention. Intention is like the beginning point. It is what we're aligned with. It is kind of the measure. It is where we want to go. Virya puts energy behind it and moves it in that direction. Again, mindfulness comes into play. You know, our whole view comes into play. How do we, our view of dukkha, impermanence, anatta, that comes into play, and all that gets to be what we're aligning towards, and then intention gets to be where we're going. So it's in that Virya is also part of the Eightfold Path. So you have the right view, right intention. That's one part. You have the different behaviors, right action, right livelihood. You have the right, and then you have the right concentration, right action, right livelihood. What's the other one? Right action. Speech. Thank you. Right action, right livelihood, right speech. And then you have the concentration. You have the effort and energy. And you have the mindfulness as part of it. So they support each other. That helps. Yeah, Lauren.
Well, I noticed the way you connected area with joy, and how initially you have an intention. You know, you're aligned with an intention, which gives energy because it's, you know, it's because your intention. In that direction, it seems like that gives energy and the intention as you decided to take the task of doing this talk. You made a decision that this was the right way to go, because it was aligned with something that would be an offering and something that you learned from. And then as you proceeded along, the energy was built up.
Yes.
You know, it starts out as maybe, this is giving me an edge, it's uncomfortable, but I know this is the right, that this is the right way. I made a decision that this is the right way to go. And then as you proceed, the energy builds and also seems to lead to joy. I mean, when you describe the cleaning the stove, I don't necessarily want to go in certain directions. It's harder. But if I go in that way, maybe it's connected to all the awakening factors. Maybe they're going to help each other build. But anyway, I appreciate it. You have several examples of the joy part.
Did everybody hear that comment? Yeah, that the idea of the intention and the virya, they kind of support each other, and there's joy that arises, and it keeps going in that direction. Yeah. Was that basically? Did you have a question aside from? Yeah, it's really is nice. It really is a nice. It's a great system. It's a great system. There's different aspects of us. I mean, we have our heart mind, it's kind of, heart is often how we say it. There is our bodies, our somatic bodies. There's energy there. There's energy in our heart. And there's, our thinking minds. Our thinking minds can't generate energy. It just sucks up energy. It just uses energy. It uses energy by thinking, worrying, figuring, da-da-da-da-da-da. Energy comes from that intention. That's the heart thing. It comes from our body. It comes from being grounded. It comes from being centered. It comes from being a certain stability in our body. And when those two are coming together, and then that's when like the intention and virya are moving in the same direction, it does lead into joy. And off you go. A couple more steps and you're going to be enlightened. There you have it. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Did everybody hear that? That was a real nice support, clarity. If I can say this, correct me if I'm wrong here. But in would that be in Hindi or another language? In Indian Pali. Okay. So Indian parlance, virya means courage. And they, in order to act along your best intentions, that's what's needed. And I think that goes to Christina Feldman's remark about heroism. She might have gotten that translation also. And that's why you find that. You find that, I imagine, virya in a number of these different lists. It's that type of thing is important. Courage is certainly important. And that's also, I think, kind of a reminder of when we're doing this practice. There's a lot of words out there that are translations of Pali words. And when the translations are made, English falls short. There hasn't been a lot of introspection in the history of English-speaking countries. So a language hasn't been developed around here. So as you get into the translations, it's always, well, it's kind of like this and kind of like that. And ultimately, you talk around it enough, you've got to get the feel for it. But I'm really glad you emphasize the importance of courage as part of the meaning of virya. Well, thank you. Yeah.
But I think if I can reframe it to, no, you have energy, it's just going in the wrong direction. That I can, and so like from what you were saying, I can get back to what is my intention? Like this peace of mind is really being comfortable in my body and in my clothes is important. Certainly the taking care of myself is important. So, and it makes me a nicer person when I don't feel bad about myself. So I want to use that.
Well, thank you. Did people hear that? Okay, I've seen nods all the way around, so yeah. The thing about virya, I guess that's one thing I've come around to just in this last couple of weeks, making that distinction. Virya is, it's a particular kind of energy. It's not just energy. It's not the energy that's allowing you to breathe. It's not the energy that's getting you, sidetracked. It's the energy that's aligning with your best intentions. So that's the virya. So, I think we have announcements tonight. So, again, thanks for your attention. It was great to be here. Appreciate it and wish you well.